Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here. A minute past the hour on this, the 20th, 17th. Having time travel problems lately. On this, the 17th day of October, 2012, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Your home, we like to say, for liberal progressive conversation unlike any other. Now, we've been at this for nearly 7 years now. The 7th anniversary will come around on the 24th day of October. That is, I believe, a week from tomorrow. Or maybe it's a week from today. Do you see the problems I have working on the fly? Oh, well. Anyway, you can get The Horn in a wide variety of places. Here, let's turn the music down a little bit. You can get The Horn in a wide variety of locations on the interweb tubes, places like Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio, where we are rather popular, last I heard. I don't go check numbers. I don't look at ratings. I figure we're either succeeding with what we do or we ain't. And given the model on which we operate, finding out which is which happens pretty quickly. So I think we're succeeding in this idea of conversation radio. But you can get us at Stitcher. You can get us at Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio. The podcast home is at whiterosesociety.org under the Head On with Bob Kincaid tab or link. And you can also get the podcasts at iTunes. There is never a charge for any of it. The easiest way to get the stream, of course, is if you're near a computer, just simply go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and choose Listen Live. And with a couple of clicks, it'll all be happening for you. And even when the show is not live, that also connects to our 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week rerun stream. Isn't that nice? This is, of course, listener-supported internet radio. It doesn't happen without you. We look to raise about $100 per show. And just before showtime, we got a note from John with a very kind contribution in it, especially in light of the fact that we try to raise about, like I said, $100 per show. John said, I'm listening to last night's podcast, and Kate told me to send some money. How could I say no? Here's a C note. Let's make it a challenge for other hornies to chip in. I'm confident you can gab this into another $100. I love the community. Thanks so much. All the best, John. And thank you profoundly, John. Now I have a bit of a quandary, because this also just came in. This shows that things are beginning to get better, or things are beginning to succeed. It is, as I said, the 17th of the month, and Robert has just written in from Australia. Robert is one of those pillars of the community who help keep things going. None of this happens without all of you. Robert says, "Dear Horn listeners, I will donate $250.
It's a big one, Elizabeth.
I will donate $250 if and only if $250 is donated before the end of the show. So we need $25 at $10 each. Or, see, you guys know. You make the ciphering and the gazendas easy for me. We need 25 people at $10 each, 50 people at $5 each, 100 people at $250 each. Bob's not well, but he turns up to do the show. So take away some of his stress tonight by giving what you can. Come on, there must be something in your budget you really, really don't need that's worth $5. As always, don't donate if it's going to leave you in a financial hole. Signed, Robert, a.k.a. Phase 5. So what I'm suggesting here is that we have $350 worth of contributions on the table to try to get us out there, out of the sweat condition alpha zone, if you know what I mean. That is merely 35 people at $10 apiece in the next 3 hours. If we do that, well, that means that we can get a whole bunch of monkeys off of the horn's back. You know, those middle-of-the-month bills. As it is, I've been kind of parsing them out and sort of... It's like a bill-paying lottery. They all go into the hat. And you draw out and you pay one, and you draw out and you pay one until you can't pay any more. You know, when they call and say, "Why haven't you paid?" I say, "Listen, I put everything in a hat. You keep complaining, I won't put you in the hat." So, can we do that? Can we clear 35 folks at $10 tonight to honor the dedication of John and Robert? You know what? I think we can. We are now at $325. Thank you very much. And again, a kind request to those of you who kick into this, please let me know by email if I can use your names. I don't like folks to go unrecognized, but I also don't want to violate anyone's sense of privacy. It means a lot, either way. Wow, this is amazing. We are now at $225. Thank you. So that's 22 and a half people. Now, listen, Solomon, put the sword up. We'll do with 22. We don't know. No, nothing needs to be chopped. 22 folks at $10 apiece, and we will have met both of these kind, generous, and determined challenges this very evening. Wow. $125. We are now at 12 folks at $10. Well, wait a minute. 11 people at $10 apiece. This is amazing. Thank you. So here we are. It's the middle of the week. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. I've got a lot of creepy middle of the week prayer meeting Wednesday stories, if you want to get to them. But I also suspect there is a desire to talk about what we all saw last night. Perhaps there's a little bit of a sigh of relief involved with all of this, because sleepy front porch Obama Thank you very much, Darlene. Thank you, Tamara. No, Robert, I think we can get this done tonight. He said, you can move me tomorrow if you want. No. Let's see if we can do this. No, we were all, I think, gratified considerably to see that sleepy nodding off on the front porch Obama did not show up last night. He was ready to... You know, I think somebody finally made him understand that Willard was not just going through the motions, that he actually wants to be president and actually wants to turn America into one great big sister wife so he can screw us all. Wait, we got to catch up to keep up with this. So that's 9 and 7 and, you know what? 5 more $10 contributions and we are done. I don't think this has ever happened before. This is amazing. Four. We are at $40 from making meeting both Robert's and John's challenges. I'm stunned. So, Randy sent in a note and said, I'm already at my limit for the month of October, but wish you well. Thank you, Randy. You've done plenty. You all do so very much. Marty writes in and says, I didn't see the pageant last night, but judging from the after-pageant spin, I figure Obama kicked Willard's tushy because the cons are blaming Candy Crowley. Candy may have actually earned her journalistic stripes for the first time in her life last night. Whatever else she has done in her career, last night will stand out because she did not tolerate it when Bishop Willard Romney told one of his 31 lies. They were counted up, you know. There were 31 of them. Somehow I prefer 31 flavors of ice cream, but no, there were 31 filthy, misbegotten, typical right-wing, repig-licking lies told last night. And Candy Crowley caught the most egregious one, because you could see that the bishop thought he had, it was disgusting. You could see that he thought he had President Obama on the ropes. He was moving in for the kill. You said you called it an act of terrorism the day after? Well, why was it 14 days? At which point Candy Crowley said, Governor, it was the next day. And if looks could kill, Bishop Willard Romney would have sent Candy Crowley away in a basket in pieces. Or maybe a binder. The signature moment from the first pageant was Big Bird. The signature moment from the vice presidential pageant was malarkey. The signature moment from this pageant, it's a multiple choice test. It could be either Willard getting called out as a liar, and it was beautiful when Barack Obama simply said, "Say that a little bit louder, Candy." Or when, and I think this really does become the signature moment of the pageant, oh, wait a minute. Ron and Raleigh is in the zone. Earned her journalistic stripes, you say, Bob? Well, just as long as they aren't horizontal and broad. Bless Jim's heart. You see the trouble you start, Jim? I bet you Jim's giggling about now. But you're right. You're absolutely right, Ray. Willard has one huge little man complex. Bark, bark, bark. But did you... The binder full of women thing. Last night, he got called for being a liar. And there were more of them. Those who don't do religion speak, who don't understand religion speak, probably didn't catch the big one. Well, I was a pastor in my church. No, you weren't. Well, maybe you were at some point before you moved up the ladder, but what you were, Bishop, was a bishop. Everybody's not a bishop. Everybody that leads a Mormon congregation is not a freaking bishop. From the pun with English department comes this from Irish Dave. So, Knight Crowley is good for debate. That's D-E-B-A-I-T. Puns really, sometimes puns work in spoken form. Sometimes they're best seen. Knight Crowley. Yeah, Knight Crowley. Fisher, anglers will know. Yeah, night crawlers. Right. You get the idea. Night Crowley. I can't get it. Such punishment. But no, I hope we can engage in a conversation. Because there are two things at work here. One is that people who have their eyes open, I think, as Charles Pierce noted over on his blog at Esquire, saw the real Romney. Hateful, mean, spiteful, snarky, disrespectful. By God, I think if he could have gotten away with it, he would have tackled Barack Obama to the ground and shaved his head. Don't you? I mean, there are a series of photos that show him sneering and scowling and, horrifying looks. Just nasty. And it was telling that it was a question about gender pay equity. Not just gender equity, gender pay equity. Things like the Lilly Ledbetter Act. That Bishop Willard decided he was not going to answer and instead started ad-libbing. And whenever Bishop Willard goes off book, he opens his mouth and bats fly out. So that when we saw him say, instead of addressing the issue of whether or not women should be legally mandated to be paid the same as men, when we saw him dance around that to say, when I became governor of Massachusetts, to the extent that anyone can, you know, that's one of those little snide, knife point, pinprick kind of things. You know, Massachusetts is ungovernable because they're full of, you know, liberals. So he goes off script, and he says, I looked around and I said, why are all of my cabinet position applications being made by men? Well, Governor, that's who wants to work with you. Well, I want some women's. And we looked around and we couldn't find any women's. So we reached out to some women's groups and they sent us binders full of women. The last binder full of women that I saw was the special anniversary edition of Playboy that you could order for a significant amount of change. Binders full of women. He also went on to show his humane bishopy side when he explained that why I made it possible for one of my employees to go home so she could cook dinner. Well, bless your pointy little head, Bishop. Maybe you could have... Nah, wouldn't want to do that. So we really do have a pretty good idea after last night what Bishop Willard thinks of women. They live in binders. I got a big giggle out of our buddy Michael. Thank you, Michael, for kicking in. I think I got a big giggle out of him last night when we were talking about what was in those binders. And I said, Sister Wife Levisa likes to go for long walks by the Great Salt Lake, enjoy sunsets at Mountain Meadows and a cool glass of buttermilk. Her hobbies include midwifery and scoping out the next potential sister wife. But the funny thing about the binders full of women is that, honest to God, if you were around Bishop Willard Romney and he said that it was raining outside, wouldn't you just get your little tanning reflector and just cover yourself in tanning oil and get your blanket and run out in the yard? Because the man is constitutionally incapable of telling the truth. The bishop is. When he was talking about those binders full of women, it, like everything else that emanates from his mouth, that does not involve his own personal wealth, is simply not true. And the fact checkers out there have gone after the binders full of women story with a will. I mean, what kind of image does that conjure for you? First of all, it's the 1990s, and I guess we were still using binders back then. Michael tells me that binders full of women on Facebook has gone up to like something around 311,000 likes. But in the story he tells, he says that, well, let's go to the audio just so that we've got it all squared up.
And I said, well, gosh, can't we find some women that are also qualified? And so we took a concerted effort to go out and find women who had backgrounds that could be qualified to become members of our cabinet. I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women. I was proud of the fact that after I staffed my cabinet and my senior staff, that the University of New York in Albany did a survey of all 50 states and concluded that mine had more women in senior leadership positions than any other state in America. Now, one of the reasons I was able to get so many good women to be part of that team was because of our recruiting effort.
Because, yeah, okay. So that seems pretty straightforward, right? as noted over at Daily Kos, in a diary entry by Kylie Joy Gray about Mitt Romney's binders full of women, guess what? It's BS is the title. She writes, just one teeny tiny little problem with Mitt's vote for me because binders pitch. She says, as David S. Bernstein explains, it's bullshit. David S. Bernstein writing, what actually happened was that in 2002, wow, it wasn't the 1990s, I'm sorry. I guess I need a fact checker. Prior to the election, not even knowing yet whether it would be a Republican or Democratic administration, a bipartisan group of women in Massachusetts formed MassGAP, M-A-S-S-G-A-P, to address the problem of few women in senior leadership positions in state government. There were more than 40 organizations involved with the Massachusetts Women's Political Caucus, also bipartisan, as the lead sponsor. They did the research and put together the binder full of women qualified for all the different cabinet positions, agency heads, and authorities and commissions. They presented this binder to Governor Romney when he was elected. Bernstein continues, I have written about this before in various contexts. Tonight I've checked with several people directly involved in the MassGAP effort who confirmed that this history as I've just presented it is correct, and that Romney's claim tonight that he asked for such a study is false. In other words, the man is a liar. Now, Barack Obama is too nice to call him the liar that he is. And we know that the for-profit media sphere would be awash in gasps and pearl-clutching if he was to do such a thing and talk about the lack of civility in our political discourse. You know, after a year of racial smears and epithets and allegories and analogs. But if he were to call Bishop Willard Romney the liar that he is, the for-profit media would probably have a collective case of the turtle squirts. By the way, Mr. Bernstein also notes that when the positions were filled in the Romney administration in Massachusetts, none of the senior positions Romney cared about, budget, business development, so forth, went to women. Secondly, a UMass Boston study found that the percentage of senior-level appointed positions held by women actually declined throughout the Romney administration. So he may have some binders full of women. But I'm guessing that those binders full of women probably have the pages all stuck together. I don't suppose we should be surprised. Yeah, that number is 316,000 likes on Facebook for binders full of women. Romney's underscore binder has buku followers on Twitter now. And so you have to ask yourself, and this is the second part of whatever if this is passing for analysis, we come to the second part of it, and that is this. So, with the world having been shown last night, the frustrating part of the first pageant was that Barack Obama just let another rasher full of lies. I think there were 28 in the first pageant from the bishop. Go by unchallenged, and he even let a couple of pitches go past him right over, hanging curveballs right over the middle of the plate. But to the extent that the American people have now seen that Bishop Willard Romney is so power mad that he will lie even over trivial things in order to get his hands on that to which he thinks he is deserving by privilege. Remember, Ann Romney told America that we lumpen proletariat, we hoi polloi, we filthy proles, don't understand how privileged we are to have a good man like Bishop Willard Romney be willing to be our glorious leader. Into a dim and dark and terrifying future. Jesus Christ, the present itself is terrifying enough. The Romney future has no lights in it. I don't care how much he and Barack Obama talked about what fans of coal they are. I listened carefully. I didn't think I heard the word clean, which was at least a bonus. We still don't have a discussion of climate change. Because the only way we could have a discussion about climate change in this country, or during these pageants at least, would be to use it as character impeachment evidence against the bishop. Because the bishop was concerned about climate change before he decided he wanted to be president of the United States, because by God, he deserves it. Which means that he had to get in bed with people who, unlike him, did not believe in climate change. Or who, more importantly, did not know that climate change is real. Believe is a word that we should not be using in context with climate change. One either knows the science or one does not. Science does not and has never called upon anybody to engage anything but their intellect. It is not a question of faith. But all that having been said, it would just be impeachment evidence against Willard. Because last night it was all just a little, it was so precious, both men blowing kisses at the coal and the oil industry. With at least President Obama making passing reference to the fact that he thinks we ought to think about some green, sustainable, futuristic energy and move in that direction. One of the more disgusting, unmannerly, rude moments for the son of privilege, Bishop Willard, was when he tried to lecture Candy Crowley. By the way, as our buddy Dennis just reminded me, the bishop was cheated again. You know, we caught him pulling notes out of his pocket at the first pageant. At this pageant, there was an agreement, a contract, in paper, in writing, signed, four corners, that said neither candidate will directly address the other. Well, they both did it, but the first to do it and the worst to do it was Bishop Willard. There was still a lot left to be desired out of the pageant. But at least Barack Obama put one right across Willard's chin and then walked away as the pageant concluded. Irish Dave is incorrigible. Which sister wife has the dressage horse named Sibian? So then the second part of the analysis. We watched and saw what we thought was a bit of a comeback on the part of Barack Obama. But then we saw the flash polling start coming in. because people cannot be left, the for-profit media cannot leave people to make up their own minds. They must tell us what other people think so that we can then conform our thinking to the norm that they present. What were those numbers looking like? I saw one that said 37% of viewers thought that Obama had won. 33% thought that Bishop Willard had won. They were apparently watching via closed circuit out on planet Kolob. And then there was 30%, because 37 plus 33 is 70. And that left 30%. And they just kind of thought it was a tie. It is a draw. They both done real good. And then came the interviews. I saw them on MSNBC. I saw them on PBS. I did not go over, I admit, I did not go over. My gallbladder couldn't stand it. I did not go over to Radio Rwanda to see how they were spinning it. I had already seen on Twitter how it was being handled. It's all this Candy Crowley's fault. We would have won tonight except for her. The Candy Crowley liberal media bitch. Oh, they were losing their tiny minds. But in those impromptu interviews of those precious, and I mean they are precious, undecided voters, the two or three that I saw, came out the same way. One person would say, yeah, I'm voting for Obama, and another person would say, well, I'm voting for Romney, and everybody else would just sit there. Like cows staring at a new gate. I was conversing back and forth on the Facebook and the Twitters. Beth from Dallas and I were talking about, I think she said something like, how can one person with two brain cells rub together not come to a decision? You know, not saying, not even being partisan, you know, not saying how can a person with two working brain cells not realize that Obama needs to win, but how can a person with two working brain cells to rub together not pick one or the other? Because at this point, those people are going to go into the booth and flip a coin. And I don't want the future of my country to depend upon a coin toss. I've been known to root for the Pittsburgh Steelers from time to time, and I've seen coin tosses go wrong. You know what I mean? Maybe it was Nancy that asked that. But at some point, I said that the American presidential undecided voter at this point could drown in a snow flurry. You might have to think about that image for a little bit, but you'll realize. But then no thought is all, no pondering at all is required for what Beth's response was. And that was, yep. You know, there's a reason we have Texas. Texas has done wonderful things for the language. God bless Molly Ivins, Jim Hightower. Beth said, yep. At this point, the undecided voter couldn't find his ass with both hands in a hall of mirrors at high noon. And I thought, my God, how true. Too true. And so we come back to the inquiry we have previously made. Who are they? Where do they live? What do they do? What happens in their world? I want to see. You know, there's great documentary filmmakers out there. I know some. I want to see 24 hours in the life of an undecided voter. I want to see the footage of them walking into walls thinking that they're doors. I want to see them spending hours trying to decide whether to go through the door or to close the door. Because they are, after all, undecided. And the fate of an entire empire rests with them. And the excuses given by some of these yet remaining undecided voters? Well, I just don't know. Romney's a businessman, and a businessman should be able to fix all of this. Sweetheart! Buddy! You don't know anything about business, do you? The purpose of a corporation is not to help an economy. The purpose of a corporation is not to create jobs. The purpose of a corporation is to do just enough to render a handsome profit for its ownership, whether publicly or privately held. A corporation has no ethical duties. No ethical obligations. A corporation has no morals imposed upon it. That's why we have to create laws that threaten to punish them if they don't behave. Corporations are like sociopaths. They are. Because corporations have no conscience. They have one fiduciary duty, and that is to provide profits to their ownership. And as long as they do that within the bounds of the law, that's all they have to do. And so when this undecided voter says,
Governor Romney was a businessman,
you know, sweetheart, buddy, have you forgotten that George W. Bush said he wanted to run the country like a corporation, and he wanted to be our CEO, and the corporation that he wanted to model us on was Enron? Yeah. And he did. He kept that promise. And that is a promise that we continue to pay for. When the tax cuts for the wealthy were first being discussed in 2001, I remember some smart people saying, but the way he's got them structured, the chickens won't come home to roost until 2012. And by then he will be long gone. And it will be some other president's problem to deal with, and some other president will be taking the blame for it. And Barack Obama at that time wasn't even a twinkle in anyone's eye. And I remember, as a young man, not quite yet 40, thinking, 2012, it's a long way off. Where were you 11 years ago? What would that have meant to you? That's a long way off. But I'll be almost 50 then. And that could spell real trouble. And it has. for all of us. But whoever it was wasn't lying. Maybe it was David K. Johnston, the author of books like Perfectly Legal, and he's got a new one out and is one of the smartest people at unraveling all of this Republican bunko scheme going.
I don't know, that Governor Romney, he's been a businessman. He successfully run businesses.
Really?
Did you not catch any of the commercials? No, those commercials, they're just all lies.
Okay, well, let's talk for a minute, undecided voter, about the commercials that haven't been presented. Let's talk about that Bishop Willard Romney commercial that has never run because it has been never made, in which a person whose company was bought and whose job was shipped to China sits and looks meaningfully into the camera. Maybe they'd shoot it at a local sort of hometown kind of diner, sitting at the counter there with the red and white plaid paper placemat and the tired old industrial silverware and that white thick coffee mug in front of him, and he's wearing a flannel shirt that almost matches the paper placemat, and he's, Bishop Willard Romney sent my job to China, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It made me understand that I had been relying on a company to provide me with a sense of self-worth, and since then, I've taken off 175 pounds now. My doctor'd probably be proud, but I can't afford to go to no doctor. Now, sure, we went through a rough patch when we lost our house, and we didn't like living in the car. But we even learned a lesson there, because living in the car wasn't near as bad as living outside when we lost the car. Bishop Willard Romney is a strong, smart, savvy businessman, and he knows what's good for America. And that's why I'll be voting for him when I crawl out of my cardboard box and go toddling down to the polls to see if my cardboard box is actually a residence, and they'll let me vote. Really? Undecided voter? Where's that commercial? And the China business? Who told Bishop Willard that it'd be a good idea to go banging away on China? You know, regardless of who wins this election, we're going to have a continuing relationship with the People's Republic of China. There's just no way around it. This may be the Chinese century, this 21st century. If you have that long view of history, you know that Chinese culture expands and contracts and expands and contracts, and we're in one of the expansion phases. And with that in mind, how are they going to feel about all of this slamming, all of this mudslinging? But Bishop Willard thought he would try to defuse the situation. But, well, I've had a blind trust for the last 8 years. And I'm sure that my blind trust has some Chinese investments in it. So too does yours, Mr. President. What's in you? And began cross-examining the President of the United States again as if he was some schoolboy that he wanted to knock down and shave his head. Or maybe strap him to the roof of the car and head for Canada. And you know what? There is probably a smidgen of truth in that. I'm sure that there are mutual funds in President Obama's investment portfolio that have some either Chinese businesses or companies doing business in China in them. To the extent that any members of the Horn family have mutual funds, unless you have been very proactive in your portfolio, in your mutual fund selection, odds are that's there too. Isaac points out that when Willard told Obama that he had investments in China, Obama didn't deny it. And you wouldn't. But the thing is, that was another one of those hanging curves. There is a great, great big difference between having one half of 1% of your portfolio of mutual funds being made up of some sort of Chinese investment and having bought companies wholesale. Damn, never pay retail in the Romney family. Having bought companies wholesale, fired everybody, sent the jobs to China, and continuing to reap profits from them. Not as some little pissant member of a mutual fund, but as the primary, as the principal, as the decision maker, the decider, if you will, to recall the words of another W. So I don't know, for as satisfying as it was to see President Obama rise to the occasion last night, almost as if on cue, almost as if it was the American Political Wrestling Federation show down to the armory. As satisfying as that was, as gigglesome as that was, I certainly am not prepared to sit here this evening, this 17th day of October 2012, and say that we're out of the woods. I'm not prepared to say that we're on the necessarily even on the right path, or on a path. I think we're still hacking our way through the brambles. But the question, for those of us thinking folks, and mercifully, that is 100% the sum total and entirety of the Horn family, are those undecided voters. You know, the Reverend Al Sharpton pointed out that that was a really, really, really lily-white audience last night. All of whom were, remember, undecided voters. Which in itself is a sort of angle, hook. It was a set piece to further the dramatic action of the plot. But our question, I think, is to understand, or to ask ourselves, how do we understand? In the year 2012, right at 3 weeks from a presidential election, how there could possibly be an undecided voter in the United States, and whether that is itself simply a conceit, a method, a mechanism, a thing. Yeah, I see Sandra with a very valid question. Why didn't Obama mention Romney's unheard-of $100 million IRA? Who has one of those? She asks.
Well, Romney and his pals. There were several inexplicable moments. I forget what exactly he was talking about when I tweeted something about, please don't leave this one hanging over the plate and watch it land in the catcher's mitt, Barack. I had the cabinet secretary of Jesus Barack on speed dial last night. Andy tells us with the subject line, the vignettes are there, about a dozen companies Willard ran into the ground. There's only one person to blame for not exposing Bishop Willard, the corporate predator. Remember, Andy, I say parasite. It's Barack Obama. The data are there. The trail of bankrupt companies, working lives destroyed, and loss of health care causing premature death. It's all there, but Mr. Obama doesn't use it. If he loses, he has no one to blame but himself. The Repiglicans are playing hardball while he plays the Chicago School constitutional lawyer, not understanding you don't sway people by facts, you sway them by emotion. How many times do we have to be told that? George Lake has told us that so many times that I imagine the man probably has lost his voice by now. Research shows it. You can sit there and talk to people about numbers all day long, but if at some point in time you do not reach their heart, it doesn't matter. For the life of me, I cannot remember the name of the plant that's going out of business in the next few weeks before Christmas. That was a fine and going concern. And that wasn't raised. I understand that President Obama has to keep blowing kisses to the coal industry because West Virginia? We're a lost... Sensata. Thank you, Marty. We're a lost cause here. But there's a good number of coal votes in Ohio. That's why all those unpaid coal workers lost money for Bob Murray while they went out and became a human backdrop. Sort of like all those deer heads on the wall behind Reverend Brother Representative Dr. Paul Brown of Georgia. Well, Bishop Willard Romney had human coal miner heads as his backdrop at that coal mine over in Ohio that was idled so that they could be forced to come there voluntarily. There's a lot of votes, and there's a lot of coal country that isn't West Virginia. I don't think anybody expects Barack Obama to even compete in Kentucky or West Virginia, but Ohio is a necessity. And Virginia is very nearly a necessity. So that's why all the kisses keep getting blown to the coal industry. Here endeth tonight's filibobster. I hope we've at least got we've primed the pump for plenty to talk about. We've got lines that you can dial in on. We've got two on hold. And four to fill up. You know the number, 304-658-3333, as well as toll-free 877-443-2366. It's 877, the numeral 4, head-on. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. What we do here, we like to call conversation radio. I like to call it that because it's as close to a neighborly conversation as electronic media can or have ever delivered. And I'm mighty proud of what we have all built together. And I am, of course, Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and reflect the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Thanks, everybody, for reminding me that it is Sensata. My mind came up with everything but Sensata. But that is a horror story. That at some point in time, Bishop Willard Romney should be compelled to confront. Isaac with an email in. Give that man Andy a beer on me, Bob. Well said, Andy. Indeed. Andy says a whole bunch very well. A number of you have asked about the fundraising challenge. This is amazing. This has never happened before. But both John's and Robert's challenges have been met in a single hour of broadcasting. What do you know about that? When the show closes tonight, I'm going to engage in an absolute frenzy of bill paying. Power company's going to be thrilled. Water company's going to be thrilled. Yeah. A lot of people are going to be real happy. Might even, let's not talk about getting ahead of anything. But, metaphorically speaking, I'm going to walk out onto the porch and kick that wolf about, 30 feet out into the yard. I like wolves. I don't want to kick it. Maybe we'll just, throw a bone out there and get it off the, you get the, yeah, get the wolf away from the door. Right. And so, like I said, the lines are open. If you want to jump into the conversation, let's go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Wow, I get to start off the program.
Hey, Tracy, you were part of it. Thank you.
So, like I said, every time I'm able or listening to the show, I don't get to listen often, I will spend money. I have no problem. As a matter of fact, today went to the airport. I haven't worked at the airport in ages because I don't like it, but it was a shortened day today, so I decided to do so. And my first $50 that I made went to you, so it's cool. It's cool. It's, cash money. I love it. But in any queue, I had the most amazing conversation today with one of my customers. As you know, I drive Access, and I picked up this gentleman who is an older black gentleman who was a double major back in the day in political science. So he lived and breathed political science, and we had the best conversation about the undecided voters. And he's like, okay, so like you were saying, I don't care who you're going to vote for, but at this point in the game, when the election is, 2 weeks away, and you saw two debates by, our current president and the presidential nominee, And the one debate with the vice president and the vice presidential nominee, how can, what world are you breathing? Do people have to walk up to you and say, and slap you upside the head and say, breathe, bitch, because you don't know how?
I'm with you. I'm beginning to wonder. Well, you know what? If there's a silver lining to all of this, Tracy, is this: the idea that there are these undecided voters must absolutely drive all the right wing money crazy. They've spent billions sleazing and sliming and filthing and mudding on Barack Obama. And there's still some people that aren't sure if they want to vote for the bishop.
Exactly. Still. It's like, you know, and just listening, you know, one of the things we were talking, me and this, my customers talking about was, well, I started the conversation. We were talking about the Republicans, and how they have been, you know how we talk about their sociopaths and stuff like that?
Right.
They're con artists, and they're not in it. For the short con, baby, they're in for it in the long con, because they have been working this shit since Nixon. Okay, they have been working it, so you know nobody's noticing about people being disenfranchised because the fact that they may vote the Democrat. They're not nobody's noticing about all this redistricting and you know and gerrymandering and all this stuff is being done so quietly because they figure nobody's gonna pay attention to the small stuff. Nobody's paying attention to the fact that we're getting the two biggest ways that people of color, primarily African American, could get out of poverty was union jobs and education. Well, there's two other ways, you know, later in the, you know, or entertainment and sports. I don't sing and dance, and I sure as hell can't dribble a ball. And me being a woman, there's not many professional sports teams for women anyway. So I was out the loop on that one anyway. So I'm not 6'5", and I'm not a brother. So I couldn't have played basketball even if I wanted to, and got paid for it except for the last 10 years when we had the WNBA. So I was out the game on that one. So the main goal for cutting education, the main goal for getting rid of people of union jobs or just in you know getting rid of the power of the union, is let's face it, these people. You have people of color finally able to work and have earn a decent wage and actually pay attention to what's going on. But if you're so busy working at Walmart or Jack in the Box or Taco Bell and that's your third job, when are you going to have time to, I don't know, read and listen to what's going on and see? I don't know. Am I?
No, you're right in the sweet spot.
You know. So it's the long con, baby. You know, I love.
And the, I love you know the proof is also the proof is also there in what you say of another point. More than any other election that I'm aware of, and more so even than 2008, there has been this running line of commentary and dialogue from the right wing about, well, don't the black people understand we love them more and we want them to be all rich and stuff?
And that's there you go, right there. We love them. We want them to believe the lie. Because the problem is, I can't get rich. Because see, the problem is, I don't have that fair shot. Well, I did because I went to college. But my son, who is brilliant, wants to be a teacher. I'm like, son, you can't take care of your mother in her old age or a teacher's staff. But hopefully that'll change. Hopefully teachers will finally get the respect and the pay that they are due. You know, and like
well, you can hope in one hand and in another.
I believe in fairy dust and unicorns too.
Yes.
So
I understand.
You know, but
you are touching on something, Tracy, that needs to be said out loud, and that is this. What? I forget, there was some poet back in the early 1800s, maybe, you know, back when tuberculosis was a sure enough death sentence, right?
Yes, of course.
And he talks about seeing that spot on his handkerchief. You know, you'd cough and there's a little spot of blood on your hand.
And you knew you were dead.
Yeah, you're dead. You're walking. You're dead man walking.
Dead man walking. You knew it.
And
there was nothing.
And see, I think somewhere in the upper reaches of the Republican Party, there's a lot of old white folks looking at red spots on white hankies, politically speaking. Because they cannot reach the African-American community. Their efforts at outreach toward the Latino community have been disastrous.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that they're left being a sort of... And we're talking about 20 years' time. We're not talking about a time period... You know, we're not talking about the year 2100. We're talking about the year 2030, when the Republican Party, by the sheer simple force of demographics, is going to be reduced to a bridge club.
Mm-hmm.
And there is going to be a rising there is a rising power base of persons of color, because persons of color are going to be the majority in this country.
Yes, they are.
And so what?
Well, it's like I had a friend that had a shirt, "Breed out Whitey."
Yeah, and you know what? It doesn't. You don't even. Nobody even has to try.
No,
it's just math. The math doesn't add up. It's like last night in the pageant, with all the talk about, you know, Barack Obama promised us he'd fix the immigration problem, and he didn't do it in his first year, and it was just freighted. You know, he had super majorities in both houses of Congress. You filthy liar, Bishop.
Liar? Lying!
But there's lying. A lie, but there's even a lie that underpins that. My good friend Jeff Biggers has been doing amazing work down in Arizona for the last couple of years, covering all of the cultural upheavals there. And he has a brilliant piece up at the New York Times right now. And I'm trying to get it's called "The Arizonification of America."
Mm-hmm.
It was published 2 days ago by Jeff Biggers under the Campaign Stops blog. And he has a new book out. Bear with me for just a minute. He has a new book out called "State Out of the Union: Arizona and the Final Showdown Over the American Dream." And he talks about all the pushback to what is going on there. And this is the immigration debate, as it was presented last night by that dirty little liar, Willard Romney. And I'm tired of dancing around it. The man could not be trusted with the carcass of a dead skunk, Tracy. There is a lie that underpins all the entire immigration so-called debate, and that is this: that there are these things called borders that are real.
Yeah.
They're not. The people who have come from south of the American so-called border to here to work, and the concepts of self-deportation, that filthy eugenic notion. We have to understand that people have been moving about this continent pretty much of their own free will for about 15,000 years or more.
Yeah.
And for us to pretend that they're going to stop doing it...
It's just stupid.
...is stupid, and it is even more stupid when it is the policies that we enact that create the migrations. You know,
exactly.
the massive migration of the mid-90s into the first decade of the 21st century is a direct and proximate result of NAFTA. We made it happen. We forced, by virtue of that benighted, misbegotten piece of treaty.
Drivel.
Yeah, we forced compañeros off their farms in Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador and all the way down into South America. We forced them off their farms. We forced them into the situation that the right wing now complains about. And it's not the first time that it's happened. And you might find it interesting to know, Tracy, that the first time it happened in the 20th century, guess who the guinea pigs were? Huh?
Which one, the black people or the Mexicans went for the great pickers and whatnot and so forth?
No, no. In the 20th century, the first real guinea pigs in this experiment were white folks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because in the years following, and no one details this better than our dear friend Joe Bagent, God rest him, or whatever, you know, some critter maybe, or nobody, whatever. May he be at peace. Let us say that. Joe Bagent documented this in heartbreaking detail in his final book, the memoir Rainbow Pie. He had there were thousands upon thousands of successful Appalachian families, and they were largely white, and they subsistence lived in communities that sustained themselves. And they grew things like tomatoes and took them to the cannery down the road and made enough money to get through the next winter. And they raised hogs on their little subsistence farms, and they raised a cow to slaughter, and maybe they had a dairy cow for milk. And nobody was rich, but nobody felt particularly poor. And those people were deliberately driven off of their farms, off of their land, and into the factories of the cities of the then dawning perpetual consumer class post-war industrialization, because we had to keep the economy running at that fever pitch that the Second World War had generated, lest we go back into depression and recession. So it's not like NAFTA was thought up out of nowhere.
No.
The first experimentation in that was in the depopulation of Appalachia. And it was simply transferred onto persons of color, but the right wing, the beneficiaries of all of that cheap labor, they can't resist. It is impossible for them to resist letting their bigot, racist, freak flag fly.
Well, here's my personal favorite. You know, you were mentioning to me about the sister that's a Mormon and in a teabagger, or is, what's her name again? Love or
Mia
whatever.
Love, yeah.
Okay. And see, here's what I have to say about people like her, people like Condoleezza Rice, and not forget my boy Clarence Thomas, and Larry Elder, and their ilk.
Don't forget General Colin.
No. He is the one. You know what I like about Colin Powell? The fact of the matter is, okay, he may be a Republican, but the man still believes in the right to choose. And also, he is a firm believer in affirmative action, because he will say it in a minute. If it wasn't for a program like affirmative action, it got my foot in the door. What I did once I got my foot up in the door was entirely up to me. And that is one of the things that I respect about that man. He's not like Clarence Thomas, who says he's ashamed of his law degree. He has it in the basement somewhere because he didn't get it because of affirmative action. Nigga, please. Do you think those, where did he go to law school? Harvard, Yale, wherever. Do you think those white folks at that law school, okay, yeah, they had to let you in, but they didn't have to keep you there. Do you think that if you didn't do what you were supposed to do as a law student, do you really think they would have kept your happy black ass there? They would have found any and every way to get you out of there if you weren't doing what you were supposed to do as a student.
Oh, yeah. The first year of law school, I can testify, is a brutal, nerve-wracking time.
But
they will get your black ass, your white ass, your brown ass, your yellow ass, your pink ass out of there if you cannot cut the mustard.
If you cannot cut the mustard. Okay? So for you to say, I'm ashamed of my law degree, really, nigga? And I have to say it, really, nigga? And I say it with, you know, like, really? Are you really? Because, see, my thing is these black folks, these conservatives, these tea baggers, these tea partiers, or whatever the hell you want to call yourself, these people who will let the white folks brainwash you into thinking it is a bad thing to be black, okay? And it's a bad thing to help your folks. Okay? Because, see, white folks have been playing with nepotism all for ever since there was the first white black man that walked out of the goddamn cave and stood upright, there has been nepotism.
Well, I mean, he was actually the first man weren't white, but what?
I know. I said the first white man. I didn't say the first man.
Okay.
I said the first white man that walked out the cave and stood upright. And yes, I am a Christian and I do believe in creationism and all that, but I still believe in science. So, the first one that stood up and walked upright, there has been nepotism. And when, you know, when a white person would get in my face about voting, oh, you're only voting for Barack Obama because he's black, I'm like, and what the fuck difference does that make? Y'all been voting white folks in for hundreds of years.
Because they're white.
I said, you could have two candidates, a black candidate and a white candidate, and you know good and damn well that black candidate is going to cares about your community, your state, your city, and your country, or what have you. But by virtue of the fact that the man is a black man, or God forbid, a woman, or a black woman, oh my God, you're going to go running and screaming into the night and vote for that white person, that white man, or what have you. Even though you know he is going to rape and pillage this country, he is going to run this country into the ground and leave it bleeding on the side of the road. You know damn well that's going to happen. But by virtue, I have friends, lifelong Democrats. Well, they're not friends. I take that back. People that I know who were lifelong Democrats, generations of Democrats, but did not vote for our president by birth because he was a black man.
We do remember where I live, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the Democratic primary this year, 40% of the folks voting voted for a convicted felon cooling his heels in prison in Texas. In the Democratic primary, which only Democrats and independents can vote in. It's not like the Republicans mm-hmm. snuck over and, you know, had a joke on us. No. Those were because you remember 23% in 2008, in May of 2008, Tracy, 23% of the Democratic voters in the Democratic primary voted for Hillary. And I mean Hillary mopped the floor with Barack Obama here in West Virginia. 23% of those Democratic voters who voted for Hillary said they didn't vote for Hillary because she was the better candidate. They didn't vote for Hillary because she was a white woman necessarily. They voted for Hillary because America's not ready for a Negro in the White House.
Plain and simple.
No, that's just, yeah, that's, you know, we can maybe someday, Tracy, have the America we want. But until then, we have to make it from the America we have. And in order to make the America we want from the America we have, we've got to deal with reality.
When people say there race is no longer an issue, I got to say how. Because I said, oh, because you're white, so it's not an issue for you. When I still walk into a store and get followed, when I don't get service at a restaurant, when I have a customer walk out of his house and see me and my cab and walk back in and cancel an order so he does not have to ride with me. And you're telling me that race is no longer an issue for who? Because it sure hell is an issue for me.
Sure it is.
It sure is. Race and gender is an issue for me.
And that's why, that's why, and I don't think Bishop Willard, Tracy, wanted last night to be the gender debate.
No.
But he sure got outfoxed into having it be one.
Mm-hmm.
Because we learned, is there anybody who has anything approaching an enlightened view of women's roles in American society who would voluntarily trade places with Ann Romney?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Would you? Really, would you?
No. I mean, look.
Did you see? Did you see how Obama stood around and shook hands last night and greeted people?
And Bishop Willard, I mean, he left like a dog with scalding water thrown on him.
And left his wife dead in there.
I don't know. Maybe I think Ann came up to him and said, Willard, honey, we're going to go home and talk about them binders. What's this about these binders you got?
Binders full of women. Fine, and like when you said they with the pages were stuck together, I'm like, ew.
You know,
ew.
But you know.
Ew! God! Oh! That's just, it's so, because I have my radio going, my regular radio, so my customers can hear music, and I have you in my brand new Bluetooth that actually works. So I'm going, ew, and my customer's like, is there something? I'm like, no. Because they can't hear you.
Oh, we need to let the customers hear me.
Well, normally I could, but I don't have the capabilities yet because my phone is new. You know.
I get it. No. Yeah.
But trust me, my customers, I know when I have customers that I know I can have you listen to because I don't care. You know.
Oh, that's like it always blows my mind when I get into a cab in D.C.,
uh-huh.
There's always some kind of progressive radio going.
Yes.
And, driver might be from Ethiopia, maybe Nigeria. I've had drivers from Jordan. I've had drivers from Eastern Europe. And they are all listening to progressive radio.
Mm-hmm. And I typically, see, the problem with, because I only have, we only have the one, well, we have a couple of progressive stations, but the signal is so weak, and this is another reason why it tickles me when they say, you know, the liberal radio and all this. I'm like, AM 1150 signal is so weak that when I like go into a tunnel, it's gone. Or when I'm just on the outskirts of the metro area, it's gone. Or it's very weak and scratchy.
Yeah, I can just see you driving down the freeway with your arm hanging out the window, holding up an old coat hanger wrapped in aluminum foil with your tongue sticking out. Trying to bring in the poor little weak, the flickering candle flame liberal media radio signal.
Right.
Yeah, that's how it is in almost every city. Hey Tracy, I want to hit the rest of the blinkers, but my God, it's wonderful to hear from you two nights in a row.
I feel privileged that I started off the show.
Well, I hate to say it, but it's just dumb luck. You got in line first.
Yeah, I know. Well, like I said, God bless you and keep you, and I'm looking forward to hearing, like I said, every time I turn on the radio, and if I'm able to listen, you got a donation from me.
Bless your heart, Tracy. Thank you so much.
Like I have a two-income family now.
Right. And you know, Robert wrote in, it's not just my thanks and the thanks of everyone. Thanks go out to everybody from Robert and from John for making this challenge happen this evening, because it is amazing. It is simply amazing to behold.
I think it's awesome.
I do too. Tracy, have a wonderful evening.
You too, my love.
All right. Bye now. Drive careful. Tracy, the lady cab driver calling from, the roads in and about the greater metro LA area. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Jeremy, what's happening?
We all know that damn well that lady that Romney gave early time off to go home was told, you're going to work on the weekends, you're going to come in double the early in the morning to get that time off at night.
Right, because Bishop Willard doesn't give you anything.
And he said this while he was scouring, counting his millions in his bank accounts. So we know that happened. He doesn't give you anything. So I found that completely hilarious that he dared tell that story to answer a non-answer to the question that they
right, because the question shouldn't, most of these questions shouldn't have taken more than 2 minutes for anybody to answer. For instance, Bishop Willard, do you support gender pay equity? Yeah, you know, that is what we in the English speaking department call a yes or no question.
Right.
But instead, we get a Phila Willardster about binders full of women and sending a lady home to cook dinner.
Yeah, that's what
he does. It becomes abundantly clear that this man does not live, and you know, there are those, Jeremy, I'm sure you've met them. There are those brilliant scientific types that are even a stereotype at this point, who, you know, wear Velcro shoes because they'll otherwise forget to tie them because they're thinking about things 922 light years away from Earth.
I wouldn't bet Michio Kaku is one of those guys. He's so smart about everything, but he probably wears a Velcro shoe.
Yeah, but see, that's the point. That's not what I'm talking about when we're talking about Bishop Willard Romney. You know, things like feeding your family, that's what the help does. And ultimately, I think that's what we have to realize about him. With Bishop Willard Romney, we are all the help. I mean, he talked to the President of the United States, Jeremy, like the help. And how can you watch that and have any, and have any of that do unto others as you'd have them do unto you running through you, and say, I would never speak to somebody like that, and still think, well, you know, I'm undecided. Is that what the takeaway, Jeremy, about all these remaining undecided voters, that they all treat people like Bishop Willard treats people?
No, and I don't think they do, and I think it's a phony notion that there's undecided voters. I think they're just people they threw in there who agreed to shut their mouth, ask the question they said they would ask, or appointed us to go ask this question, not say another thing. Unfortunately, they did break the rules, and they cheered at one point when I think Obama says, I forget what it was. But I think they're all plants. I don't think they're undecided ones whatsoever.
But if they're plants, why, as Reverend Al Sharpton noted, why were there no persons of color in the audience? I mean, they did have that one lady with the Hispanic first name that Willard couldn't... I mean, he made her repeat her name three times. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't.
What's your name?
And he tried.
Yeah, you say, what's your name? And she'd pronounce it, and then he'd pronounce it, and he'd say, no, say it. What? Well, can I just call you Rosario? God.
Oh, this guy gives me a headache just thinking about him. But, I'm lost my track of thought even thinking about Romney at the moment. Oh, well, credit to Ms. Crowley for telling him basically to shut the hell up and sit down at one point, though. I thought that was pretty good. That pissed him off pretty good. You can see the look on his face when she did that.
Bishop Willard spent pretty much that entire time looking like a dog trying to pass a peach pit.
He did. I mean, you can hear the little jabs here and there. Obama, I think, did take some out of Biden's performance last week. I mean, Romney spoke up a couple different times, and Obama, to the credit of his nature, said, it's okay, you can go ahead. I'm used to being interrupted. I'll give you one more time. So he took some jabs so people could see it happening. But I just don't know.
And the thing, and again, the question is not answered. I guess, you know, and I guess that's part of maintaining this stupid horse race meme, so that we have to have a reason to have the third debate.
I'm sure it is. I was personally keeping track, and I know for at least the first 26 minutes, Romney, I've never answered a question with a real answer. It was some walk around BS, you know, like, oh, the sky's blue shit. It had nothing to do with what was going on in that question. Not to say Obama didn't do it too. Obama was a little better at it, but
if you were going to sit there, you know, kind of like they judge a boxing match, I understood where he was going with the answer, but I'm not sure that gun loving America did, Jeremy. The exchange
right.
About what we do about America's, you know, firearm problem. And he started talking about education and schools, which is the right answer, but it's the wrong answer to try to get across to, you know, America's undecided voters who apparently walk into walls and stuff. That was a tough moment. The other tough moment, Jeremy, was when they asked him, when Candy asked him, you know, I've had every smartphone ever made. What is it going to take to get some smartphones made in America? And his direct answer, which again was the correct answer, was to say, Candy, there are some jobs that are gone and are never coming back. They are low wage jobs. They are low skill jobs. And it's just not the work that anybody's going to ask Americans to do. Now, the thing is, I don't know if building an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy 3S is a low-skilled job.
I wonder if it is. Only because if you see those factories in China, Japan, you name it, it's usually someone that's dressed somewhat with loose clothing on or tight clothing so they can't steal stuff while they're in there, and they have a soldering iron and a pair of glasses. If you have the tools and someone's taking instruction on, you could build a cell phone yourself. It's not that hard to do. Not saying we couldn't do it here, and he's right about saying some jobs are gone and not coming back.
And my theory is that by sometime tomorrow, the first Romney ad will air saying Barack Obama admits that the jobs he lost are never coming back. Barack Obama simply doesn't care if Americans ever go to work again. We need a man who understands business. I mean, you see how easy it is to script?
I can see the ad coming to a mile away in that case. Yes, I definitely can.
And like I said, there were a couple of hanging curves that he let blow by into the catcher's mitt. But, you know, what he did with the last 30 seconds of the pageant was beautiful.
Hey, you know, I was listening through the live stream, so I never heard the last 30 seconds.
Well, I guess you would say that in the closer, President Obama got the last word, which of course drives a CEO crazy because white privilege dictates that Bishop Willard should always, you know, bishops get the last word, for Christ's sakes. Bishop Willard said, "I care about 100% of America." And it was wide open. So, in closing, Barack said, "Look, the man told a closed door meeting that 47% of America are losers, that they're dependent. We're talking about people who are on Social Security that they paid for all their lives. We're talking about people who served in our military who put their lives on the line." He says that they're moochers. I mean, he didn't use the word moochers, but I mean, he buried him and then said, "Good night, y'all." Willard was sitting there with a look on his face that looked like he just got done sucking green persimmons. You ever had a green persimmon, Jeremy?
No, I haven't.
It's something you will do once in your life and never again, and then you'll be able to talk about people looking like they just had a green persimmon. It will turn your mouth inside out, and you'll kind of look, well, it's a pity this is radio and not TV.
I'm sure. Switching gears for a second, well, not for a second, probably for the remainder of this call, I wanted to sympathize with your medical issues, and you said you had you're racking up bills in a hospital. I can sympathize, but luckily I have medical insurance, but still, I understand the pain of it. I heard Malloy's story last week about it, and I sent him a note basically saying that about this time last year, I had a procedure done myself. It was in and out in 6 hours, but I got knocked out and all the other good stuff. It was surgery. It was technically considered an elective. My insurance company fought it for a couple months until they realized it was a quality of life thing. Without it, I'd be in pain. It basically was a cyst. I won't go into any more explanation than that, but it had to be removed to relieve pain, basically. All said and done, when it was all said and done, I think I had $700 in copays. That was still a lot even for me to come up out of pocket with. But the total bill that I would have been land-based with would have been $14,000 for something that took 4 hours of work. Not even that. Maybe it was 30 minutes of work and 4 hours recovery time.
Yeah. And my own experience, you know, I had a doctor's appointment this morning. And it was to go in and try to figure out what to do about my gallbladder. And, you know, this was the fun part, where I looked at the doc and he looked at me and we talked about some things that are going on in the world, and he said, "You know, really, really, Bob, before I cut on you, or we work on getting it to where I can cut on you, whatever, you know, got to make payments, whatever you got to do," yeah, I really want you to see a cardiologist. He said, because, you know, you got a history of heart disease in your family, and you're describing some symptoms that just don't make me at all comfortable. And I want you to see a cardiologist. So I walked, you know, I walked out of the doctor's office looking at Agnes going, dead man walking.
Sorry, I'm not laughing. It's the irony of it. Sorry.
Well, no. I mean, if we can't laugh, you know, we'll all just sit together and bawl. But it's a fact. And I looked at Agnes and I said, I don't very often say something like this, but I said, I've got a burden on me, and I still do speak in the language that came to me from that raising in the church. I got a burden on me to write something. Now, I don't have any idea, Jeremy, where I would get something like this published, that it could get seen. And I'm not writing it to, you know, try to get help for myself. But somebody has got to write about the realities of not having coverage and what it means.
Or not very good coverage at that, because mine isn't wonderful itself.
Yeah. If we could help advance the healthcare discussion, I'm rather nonplussed by the word debate anymore in this country. If we could help advance the healthcare discussion by simply talking about what it really, really means to be badly in need of health care and unable to access it, if I could do it in such a way that makes it clear that Bishop Willard Romney is the liar that he is, then it would be worth whatever time it took me to do it. So that's something I'm going to work on. Because it's, you know, nobody's ever looked at me and said, I mean, you know, the doc has looked at me and said, you know, we've got to get the gallbladder out. And I said, okay. But nobody's ever looked at me and said, you know, I think you might be having some heart stuff going on, and you might need to have a catheterization. There might be some blockages going on there, and I don't want you to die.
No one else should die, Bob.
But having somebody to look at you and say that, you know, that's not where you go out and pop the champagne cork.
Right. No, that's a pretty serious thing when the doctor says that. Usually they're onto something. To share your misery on that, all that I had done, it's fucking back. Not as bad as it was, but it's back in the same exact spot it was.
Oh, Jesus. I've had to deal with some of that, and we won't go into details. But right. I've had to deal with some of that, and if they don't get every last little bit of it, it does come back.
Yeah, and the doctor said, he said, I'll get all of it, but he said, I think he said there's a 70% chance. He said there's a 30% chance I'll get it all, and it'll go away. He said there's a 30% chance it'll come back, I'll do it again. I'm not going to do that shit again. That was the most painful 2 weeks of my life last year in misery the whole time on Vicodin and stuff because I couldn't move from where they took it.
Yeah.
It's not back as bad as it was, but it's definitely back. So I could even probably spend another $14,000 in insurance money to have it taken off if they do it again. This time they may not. So
yeah.
It's one of the things I'll have to just bear for now.
Oh, Jesus, and that's damn difficult to bear.
Like I said, it's not as bad as it was, so I'm not really complaining. I'm just getting another. It's back.
Well, but that's not to say that it won't get as bad as that. You know, the damn things grow. That's why they are what they are.
And I'll agree with that, because I've noticed a little more pain as time's gone on, so I think it's building back. Hope it doesn't, but I've noticed it's getting more comfortable in that same spot.
Yuck.
Well, with that, I'll let you go, but if I chime in.
Well, I sure do appreciate it, Jeremy. It's awful good to hear from you.
Sure, you too, Bob.
You have a good evening.
You too, thank you.
Bye now. Jeremy calling from Vermont and onward. Lines open, by the way, if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366. 304-658-3333. I don't know. I'm going right back to this call, but graphics coming in from Michael. One of those go away chopped up in pieces in a basket looks from Bishop Willard last night
It puts the lotion on its skin, or it gets put in the binder again.
Oh, God.
And then there's the Venn diagram, two circles converging with that little ellipsoid where they both meet. One circle is people who strap dogs to their cars. The other circle is people who keep binders of women. And then the convergence of the Venn diagram is serial killers and or Mitt Romney. Philip, with some remarks, he says, Negroes in the White House. Unfortunately, I disagree with you and Tracy, Bob. Most white Americans don't have any issues with Negroes in the White House as long as they don't have any power or authority. Of course, we can advance the colored folks in the military because we need to keep our white children at home to achieve success in the private sector and not be threatened with loss of life in the bloom of their youth because of the need to preserve the empire. Be well, Philip. Philip writes with a razor-studded tongue firmly in his cheek. Lib in South Carolina noting, in the spin room post-masturbation last night, MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell interviews a former New York governor, George Pataki, who effing bold-faced lied about gas prices being so high because the EPA won't let anybody build new oil refineries. I actually caught that. And Lawrence let him get away with that BS. My hair was on fire. No, a-hole, that's wrong. The number one export of the USA today is refined oil products. We've even been exporting ethanol for years. Our refineries are doing well, thank you very effing much. Gas is high because big oil wants it to be high, and we have little option but to take it in the rear while we suck them in the Wall Street speculators. Lawrence O'Donnell lost my respect. He obviously doesn't have the balls Candy Crowley does to let that... you know, by letting such BS get passed. Now, on to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
This is Edward.
Well, hello, Edward. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I enjoyed the carryings on last evening, and I was very proud of Obama. And what is it with these undecideds?
Nobody knows.
Well, these people are so dumb they can't find their ass with both hands, a road map, and a rearview mirror.
It's the honest case, Edward. The fact of the matter is the undecided voters in America on the 17th day of October 2012 are like some sort of Jane Goodall documentary.
Well, I have a little quote to give to all these undecided voters, and it goes this way. What good fortune for government that the people do not think. That's from Adolf Hitler.
Oh, my. One more time, please.
What good fortune for government that the people do not think. There you are. There's your undecided right there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm not particularly fond of conceding the point, Edward, but I think you're right.
Yeah, well, see, my partner last evening made me get away from the TV because I was starting to throw the furniture at it.
Well, you don't have any throwable furniture anywhere nearby, do you?
No.
Okay, so I want to share something with you.
Okay.
For some reason or another, I get Willard Romney's blast emails.
Oh, my God.
And here's how they're spinning last night. This is what the Republicans are talking about and saying among themselves. Bob. They call me Bob. When I write them back, I say, Willard. Last night's debate was a missed opportunity by Barack Obama. He's had chance after chance to connect and to present America with a vision. But once again last night, the president offered no plan and nothing positive. All America got was another dose of stale rhetoric, canned excuses, and rehearsed talking points. At times, it looked like Vice President Biden was his new debate coach. Mitt Romney will not shrink from the tough questions or run away from America's problems, because apparently one of our problems is not having enough binders full of women. That's why he was the only candidate who looked truly presidential on the debate stage last night.
Really, when he was stalking, President Obama and screaming at him and looked like the Nosferatu.
Yeah.
They live in an alternate universe.
Well, either that or I've decided, Romney, the way he walks, tippy-toe. I've decided that either he has a knot in his magic knickers or a terminal wedgie.
Well, I think he's doing that because that's how he has successfully snuck up on the sister wives all these years.
You're probably right. Oh, my. Well, I won't keep you. I know other people are wanting to call in and have much more important things to say than I have.
Oh, don't ever sell yourself short, Edward.
Okay.
You have a wonderful evening.
Well, you do, too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Edward calling from the Dallas area. So it is about 6 minutes before the hour. Lines are open for Conversation Radio. I got a story here. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and this is kind of a Prayer Meeting Wednesday story. And it's not being gross for gross's sake, but it just goes to show you the convoluted, the convoluted cognitive dancing that goes on inside the right-wing evangelical mind. This is a press release from a young man by the name of Alexander Price Broughton. Okay? There's a backstory here. In the wonderful world of college life, you go off to college and you try strange, new, and different things. In former days, that meant maybe drinking too much, having sex, running naked somewhere, pranks, sleeping through class. But it is a different world in which we live now. And there is apparently a fad going on college campuses, this one arising from the dear campus of the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, down on Fraternity Row at the Pi Kappa Alpha house, Pike House. And it concerns something called butt chugging. The non-redneck term for butt-chugging is alcohol enema. Again, I'm not doing this to simply titillate. It is apparently a way of really getting really drunk really fast because the ethyl alcohol doesn't have to pass through the lining of the stomach. It's already there in the intestinal tract, and boom, you're wasted. More bang for your buck. The story goes back to an incident at the Pike House in Knoxville on the campus of the University of Tennessee in which authorities were called to the house, University of Tennessee campus police. Sergeant Angela O'Neill wrote in her report that bloodstains were found at the Pi Kappa Alpha house, and that the aforementioned Alexander Price Broughton sustained injuries to his rectum and was taken to the hospital. Sergeant Angela O'Neill wrote, "In front of the door there was an empty plastic bag. There was bloodstained tissues on the sink countertop, and the floor. I observed two of the toilet stalls had blood on the floor. There was a plastic bag with a pink wine in front of the couch and a red Solo cup containing the same liquid." So basically, Alexander Price Broughton
proud member of Pi Kappa Alpha fraternity. Tried to give himself a wine enema. This was in the early morning hours of September the 22nd. His tested blood alcohol level was 0.45. Now, in most states of this union, 0.08 will get you busted for driving under the influence. It is therefore it is the blood alcohol content level that will get you deemed to be legally intoxicated, legally under the influence of alcohol. When you get to 0.45, you're getting pretty close to not paying taxes anymore. Now, that doesn't mean you go and change your registration Republican. I mean, you know, you die. Well, in the macho and incredibly homophobic culture of the Deep South, and especially of places like Fraternity Row, poor Alexander Price Broughton has become, I suppose one might call him a pariah, because everybody's a-thinking he's a homo now. To the point that on October the 2nd, he issued a press release, because it was going all over campus that he'd been a butt chugging. He said, "My name is Alexander P. Broughton, a student at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. My attorney is Daniel F. McGehee, who has prepared this statement on my behalf, and I have given him permission to release this information to the news media. I am 20 years old and live in Memphis, Tennessee. I am the student at the University of Tennessee whose name has been circulated throughout local, national, and international media in the past week. The reports in the media are false, and the medical information provided to the media by the University of Tennessee Medical Center and the University of Tennessee Police Department has violated my civil rights." Now, understand, you don't wind up in a fraternity at the University of Tennessee unless you can afford to be in a fraternity at the University of Tennessee. And it ain't cheap. So here is a white son of privilege complaining that his civil rights are being violated. "The false reports have depicted me in a shameful light, and this has severely and permanently tarnished my reputation." Forevermore, in social circles, he will probably be known as Butt-Chugger Broughton. "For the record, I am not a homosexual, and I do not appreciate the media reports that infer that I am gay. On Friday evening, September 21st, 2012, I attended a function off the university campus where I consumed between 5 or 6 beers on an empty stomach." That doesn't get you to 0.45, I don't think, there, Alexander. "Around 9 p.m., I went to the Pi Kappa Alpha fraternity house at 1820 Fraternity Park Drive, where I foolishly participated in a game known as Tour de Franzia. The members of my pledge class," he was a pledge, "had been instructed by the chapter officers not to have this in-house party, but we disregarded their orders. I consumed wine from a wine box." Well, consumed does not indicate just exactly how now, does it? By the way, Pi Kappa Alpha has been indefinitely suspended from the University of Tennessee as a result of this. "At some point in the evening, I became very intoxicated and lost consciousness. I have been told that some of my fraternity brothers put me in the shower in an effort to wake me up, which was unsuccessful. I was apparently on the floor of the shower, and when someone attempted to raise me off the floor, that person used my belt to lift me up, which caused my shorts to be forced into my crotch area, at which time I was told that I defecated on myself." This is the guy who's trying to rehabilitate his reputation. Do you understand that pooping yourself, that publicly admitting that you were drunk and pooped yourself is better in the Deep South than saying, "Hey, everybody, I'm gay"? At that stage, someone made the decision to take me to the University of Tennessee Medical Center, where I was admitted for possible alcohol poisoning. The medical team at the University of Tennessee Medical Center, this is going to tie in with prayer meeting Wednesday in a minute, I promise. The medical team at the University of Tennessee Medical Center trauma unit apparently conducted an extensive examination to determine my overall condition. Well, that's what trauma teams do. At some point, medical personnel examined my rectum, where there appeared to be bruising, and upon further examination determined that my sphincter muscle was greatly enlarged. It is my understand... Remember, his lawyer wrote this for him. It is my understand... Really? The lawyer wrote this for him? Anybody inquired as to whether Mr. McGeehee actually has a law license? It is my understand from speaking to medical personnel after I was in recovery that there was a suspicion that I had been sexually assaulted and that the Knoxville Police Department was requested to provide a rape crisis kit for further examination. I was heavily sedated, but remember the examination. But he doesn't remember what happened. Right. I was informed by one of the nurses later that the rape kit was turned over to the Knoxville Police Department and that it would be at least a week before the test results were returned. Of course, this is America, and he will be billed for the rape kit. On the morning of September 22, 2012, while I was in the recovery area of the cardiac trauma unit at UT Hospital, medical doctor also conducted another rectal examination but did not provide me with any information about his examination, but he did not seem concerned. One wonders at how one makes that determination. I mean, this goes on forever. He talks about being visited by the Dean of Students, Maxine Thompson Davis, who came to check on my welfare, for which I was pleased. I was not contacted by any university official or member of any police department until I was requested to come to the University of Tennessee Police Department to make a statement. University of Police Officer Lieutenant Dana McReynolds, in the presence of Sergeant Angela O'Neill, interviewed me, and I told both of these individuals that I had never engaged in butt-chugging or any activity now known as an alcohol enema ever. Again, the lawyer wrote this. That I had never heard of any such thing until after I regained consciousness in the hospital, and I categorically denied ever doing any such a thing. A thing. I guess we know where Mr. McGeehee comes from. After my interview on Wednesday, the University of Tennessee Police announced on Thursday, September 26, 2012, that the case was closed. I was informed by my attorney on Monday, September 24th, so by then he's already lawyered up. And he gets the hold of the police report. He tries to get, can't get it. The lawyer tries to get it. I wanted a copy of the purported police report that supposedly stated that I was butt-chugging as released by Knoxville Police Department Officer of Public Affairs, Daryl DeBusk. Okay. Officer DeBusk stated to his opinion that butt-chugging had taken place, but that there was no substantive evidence. I specifically asked him why he did that, since he had no evidence, and he replied, "Well, that's what I thought at the time." This statement by Officer DeBusk is false, it's unsubstantiated, and totally a fabricated lie. I told him that he had ruined my life because of his wanting to create a media event. Really? It's totally false that he thought that at the time? Young Mr. Broughton know this? University of Tennessee has created a media frenzy, blah, 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 has attempted to destroy my family. This false and misleading information has attempted to destroy my family, which has repeatedly tried to inform the University of Tennessee through Dean of Students Maxine Thompson that every one of the allegations of butt-chugging or alcohol enemas was simply untrue. The University of Tennessee should be ashamed. Shame on you, UT. And then this. Now, I would be remiss, R-E-M-I-S-E. That lawyer McGee, he's one hell of a writer. If I did not all... This is... come on! Spell check? Are you telling me that lawyer McGee's spell check doesn't catch remise? Anybody out there on the fly want to do a dictionary check look of remise? R-E-M-I-S-E? As opposed to remiss? I would be remiss if I did not also make a statement about my beloved fraternity, Pi Kappa Alpha, which lost its recognition last Thursday because of actions by the University of Tennessee to suspend its recognition as a recognized university. That's some high-quality legal writing there, Lawyer McGeehee. I want to state that neither I nor any member of my fraternity, Pi Kappa Alpha, have ever engaged in butt-chugging or the use of alcohol enemas. These allegations have not only tarnished... You know, I'm doing this in the wrong accent. You'd think I'd know better by now. These allegations have not only tarnished and attempted to destroy my life, but all the lives of the men of Zeta Chapter of Pi Alpha at the University of Tennessee. That's his beloved Pi Kappa Alpha. He just didn't love the Kappa quite as much. I want to speak to my fraternity brothers across the world, wherever you may be. On my oath that I took at the time when I was initiated, I swear to each and every one of you that every allegation of the gross and immoral activity of butt-chugging or alcohol enemas, it even sounds grosser when you say butt-chugging, never ever took place at the Pike House. We are men of integrity who pledged at the time of our initiation to always be true. I pledge you my word of honor as a brother in Pi Kappa Alpha Alpha. In Pi Phi. No. Okay. We're having some Greek alphabet problems here. I pledge you my word of honor as a brother in Phi Phi Kappa Alpha. I think he's still liquored up. I could never thank the International Headquarters staff and the Supreme Council of this fraternity for the love and support which they have given me in this chapter. To all our alumni and current active members and chapters across the United States and Canada, I say no such thing ever happened. Not be led by the irresponsible media who would rather disseminate false information that creates sensation rather than to allow the truth to prevail. And all the news media who have chosen to believe the falsehoods issued by the University of Tennessee, I say shame on you. You need to go back to journalism school, take a good course in ethics. Then he moves in on the media. And then this. The movie The Wizard of Oz has many parallels to this vicious media event which has taken place at the University of Tennessee at Knoxville during the past week, which has helped to destroy my life. First, Knoxville police investigator Patricia Tipton wanted so desperately for there to be a case involving me personally as a person who was butt-chugging or ingesting alcohol through my rectum. She convinced herself that she believed that I had done this heinous act. Really? Heinous? Anus? But not heinous. Rape is heinous. Arson is heinous. Murder is heinous. Child pornography is heinous. This is just stupid. She convinced herself that she believed that I had done this heinous act. That, Ms. Tipton, is a complete total lie. You never had any evidence of any such thing taking place, and you totally distorted any information you gathered from my cousin, J.P. Carney. Wonder how J.P. Carney feels about being brought into this. You purposely twisted and contorted information you gathered in order to create a false and misleading story. You personally have destroyed my life. University of Tennessee Police Sergeant Angelo Neal perpetuated the lies she conducted her investigation in this alleged incident. During the interview, I informed the University of Tennessee Police that I've never engaged in the activity which is called butt-chugging or the use of an alcohol enema. That is the most gross idea I've ever heard. I would never do such a thing. Now, I told you there was a prayer meeting Wednesday tie-in. I'm a Christian who would never desecrate my body in that manner. Operative phrase being the dependent clause, in that manner. Because on the other hand, as a Christian, he's more than willing to desecrate his body by chugging beer and chugging Franzia wine and getting his blood alcohol up to about 0.45. But he would never desecrate his body by putting the wine in his butthole chugging. I'm a Christian and would never desecrate my body in that manner. To do so would be against God's law. Missed that whole part about being not over fond of wine, huh, son? Even after my interview where Sergeant O'Neill was standing in the interview room, she's quoted in the Knoxville News Sentinel, we just did not believe that. And then this. Okay. I want to say this as gently as I possibly can. When one is protesting one's non-homosexuality, one should probably not reference The Wizard of Oz. Somewhere Over the Rainbow being a bit of an anthem in the gay community.
But really, when one is protesting one's heterosexuality, one's devout heterosexuality, one's Christian heterosexuality, one does not conclude one's letter of protestation as follows. Dorothy, we are not in Kansas anymore. We're Tennessee, at the University of Tennessee, where lies trump the truth and the lives of young people such as mine are sacrificed at the altar to the volunteer statue. What? There's another analogy from The Wizard of Oz, and that is the fall of the Yellow Brick Road. And that road leads straight to Andy Holt Tower, the main administrative offices of the University of Tennessee. For further information, no, really, Alexander, I don't think we need any, please contact my attorney, Daniel F. McGehee, who does not own a word processing program with spell check. Thank you for allowing me to reveal the real truth. In this case, I hope the media can get it right for once. So that's just the backstory. Then this. Having read that, he brought out Lawyer McGehee. He draws that lawyer like a gun.
Could
he? Well, we'll let the advertisement pass. Oh, God, this just annoys me. I'll be glad when we get pay internet. Here we go.
We have issued a press statement today that...
The one we just read.
He adopts, and I would like to say from the very beginning, at the time when George Bopp, who is right here, and is the president, was the president of Pi Kappa Alpha on this campus, when Mr. Bopp went into his hospital room at the University of Tennessee Medical Center, he asked Xander if he had been butt-chugging. And Xander's comment was, "What in the world is that?" I appeared about 30 minutes later, along with the chap...
Well, along with the Wizard of Oz reference, he appeared. He appeared. Puff of smoke, we don't know. Flying monkeys, not sure. What in the world is that? I never heard of that down on the farm to Memphis. Yeah.
Advisor of Pi Kappa Alpha, and I informed him that the reason that I was there was to ask him whether or not he had been involved in an activity called butt-chugging. And he looked at me like I had lost my mind and said, "What is that?" And, ladies and gentlemen, that is the first time that he had ever heard of the two words, butt-chugging, which have now become two famous words across the United States and across the world.
Now, just see, the point here, though, is that Jesus don't butt chug, and Christians don't neither. Philip with an observation. He says, "When I was in college, I tried an alcohol enema with a case of Löwenbräu once, but I was subsequently arrested for public intoxication and running beer ass on campus. I had unsuccessfully tried Boone's Farm, but it only made me whine, so to speak, because my ass was so sore. Perhaps I should have tried a cheaper beverage and selected Budweiser." Philip, am I going to have to just make you and Jim sit in separate? I don't know what Of course, having been raised as a Catholic, I am deeply concerned about the clergy practicing alcohol enemas with communion wine. The transubstantiation issue of rectally imbibing in fluids from the body of Christ brings back too many recent unpleasant memories of recent and decades-long priestly misconduct, not to mention the need for creation of a new sacrament, extreme function. I must ask, if priests use Mogan David for alcohol enemas, can they claim that they are doing so in the spirit of ecumenicalism? Then again, I've always understood the Church's attitude toward gays, given that I've always been appalled by the visual imagery of Christ well hung on the cross, so to speak. Sorry, Bob, you raised the subject. I have to leave this screed now, because lightning bolts from celestial heights are searing the top of my head.
If I'm converted to Mormonism after I'm struck, does that mean I must vote posthumously for Romney? Be better and get well. Oh, dear God. Marty remembering from Greg Marmelard, president of the Omegas, Faber College. You're talking about Delta, sir.
Oh. Dear God. But do you see, I mean, this, like I said, this wasn't solely for prurient value.
Okay, it was a little prurient.
This is to show you that the depths that the fundamentalist evangelical Christians will go to avoid the idea of being gay. With a tested confirmed blood alcohol content of 0.45, I would be much more concerned about young Mr. Alexander at the age of 20. In other words, he didn't get that. It was on his own. It had to be provided to him by someone legally able to buy it. I am concerned. I would be concerned about young Mr. Alexander Broughton's propensity for the abuse of alcohol. It is not a life that he wants. It would be far. Wouldn't it? You know, if he's gay, it's okay. If he's not, it's okay too. You'll note the fallacy promoted here that one must be gay in order to attempt a booze enema.
Butt chugging.
And remember, we're talking about Romney voters here. I'm sure Mr. and Mrs. Broughton have no plans whatsoever to ever vote for that one in our White House. I'm sure that 1 in 1,000 people in East Tennessee will not vote for that one in our White House. But understand, neither the Knoxville Police Department nor anybody else ever made an allegation that Mr. Broughton was gay. The allegation was made that he had engaged in the administration to himself of an alcohol enema. Crazy crap happens inside fraternity houses, and sometimes it's deadly and dangerous. But instead of worrying about a young man who illegally obtained enough alcohol to run his blood alcohol level to 0.45, the pressing concern is that everybody understand that he's not gay. I guess that culture, everybody who's ever had an enema is gay? The only thing that ever needs to touch that is toilet paper. And that none too fondly. This is how sick our country is. This is how sick that region can be. And people, for instance, who are more concerned with whether young Mr. Broughton is gay than whether or not he nearly drank himself to death, will run, not walk, run to the polls to vote for Bishop Willard Romney because he has family values. You got it? You want to understand those undecided voters? Then understand, among other things, a mindset that is more horrified by homosexuality than by a near homicide from alcohol abuse. Understand that, and you will understand why there can be 45-47% of this country willing to vote for a man who has destroyed countless American families by shipping their jobs overseas and the money he has reaped from it into bank accounts in Switzerland and the Cayman Islands. And that picture of that America should be, and I do not use this term as a joke, sobering. Kate, who knows that neck of the woods in East Tennessee, writes and says, thanks, everyone. Thank you, John and Robert, for starting a funding firestorm, and thanks to your listener, you listeners, for putting it over the top. Kate asks you, not me, do I have permission from y'all to remind us next week how it is possible? All y'all rock. By the way, Bob, your Tennessee accent pretty much sucks. However, your proofreading is stellar. Rainbows here on the Front Range. Go big orange up there on the hill. Thank you, Kate. Ron and Raleigh noting, you know as well as I do, Bob, that frat boys would never do crazy shit with alcohol. Keg stands never. Beer shotgunning, perish the thought. Alcohol-induced homosexual dalliances could never happen. Not at the Pike House. Maybe down at the SAEs or the Sigma Chi's, but never at the Pike House. I was in a fraternity. The hazing I went through was light. Philip, Bob, please, please, please don't explore the consequences of butt-chugging too much too quickly. After watching last night's debate, I really can't cope with the concept of ass-belching tonight. But I must ask, if one becomes an alcoholic from butt-chugging, does that mean one's liver and one's colon go bad simultaneously? It really is all for tonight. I'm slamming my fingers in a drawer. Please note the singular and following Shakespeare's advice by getting myself to a punnery. Try to be well. I know it has become more difficult after reading this crap. Philip, 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 whatever are we going to do with you? Then from Don, great show today. I was just listening to your call with Jeremy from Vermont. If I recall correctly, Senator Bernie Sanders said on Facebook and on Twitter, and I'm sure he has it on his website, sanders.senate.gov, Vermont now has statewide universal health care. Has Jeremy ever looked into that? Just a thought. Maybe you and Agnes should now move to Vermont and get you the universal health care coverage, too. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Don. It's worth thinking about. Bossman 1, Wayne, once described Vermont to me as 10 months of snow and 2 months of bad sledding. At this point in time, I think I'd put up with it. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Brother Bob.
Granny T.
I had
no idea this was going to be you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to subject you to a story about Tennessee.
No, it's rather typical. That kind of thing in particular, I've never heard of it, but other types of stupidity are just...
If there's a new and novel way to abuse alcohol, a fraternity will find it.
Yeah, ubiquitous. That's the word I'm looking for.
Works nicely.
If you want to find stupidity, easy to do. So, I've forgotten what I call now. I got so enthralled with that. I try to stay well informed, but that being over on the far reaches of my part of the lovely state.
Yeah, that's a different one of the three great states of Tennessee.
Right. I'm sorry, Bob.
It's all right, Granny T.
Okay. I was calling last night. I was just a bit pleased with the debate, and when Bishop Willard went walking, I don't know if you noted how he went walking right over to get in Candy Crowley's face and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know when he was on the put this on the record and blah,
right.
blah, blah.
Yeah.
And President Obama just sat there and said, proceed, Governor. And then she pulled out the transcript. But he just tries to be so threatening, and he's a sick puppy, I tell you what.
He is. He truly is.
Look through his childhood, even holding down some kid in high school and
hacking his hair off,
and then when he was in college and his daddy was governor, getting the state to a trooper uniform and stopping women. You know, that could get you shot right there.
Well, if you weren't the governor's son.
Yeah. And then pushing his kids and grandkids' faces in butter. I mean, do you do that to your children and grandchildren?
Do you know how expensive butter is?
That is one sick little pup there, and plus all his business stuff. Well, I'm not even gonna go there, but I'm just too enthralled with that last tale to sit here and.
Well, it does kind of stop you in your tracks, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, I've been around a while, seen a lot of things. It takes quite a bit to stop me in my tracks anymore, but that did it. that pretty much did it. So I don't know anything to share with you other than I am pleased that our president did
show up.
Show up and brought part of his brain there. And I sort of wish they had got into a conflagration there. I think he likes to, Mitt likes to ruffle himself up, you know, like a big old dog or a big old chicken or something to make himself appear threatening and scary. I think Mr. Obama could have popped that little twit and he would have run off crying to Annie.
Yeah, she's the one I'm scared of. I mean, you know, we thought that Barbara Bush was creepy.
Yeah.
She's got, just as he has the potential to out WW,
yeah.
She's got the potential to out creepy Barbara. Can you imagine that woman as First Lady lecturing us little peons down here? about how misbegotten our little peon lives are.
Yes, I can imagine that very well. You people don't need to see our tax returns.
You people don't know how privileged you are that Bishop Willard is president.
Yeah.
He's the white horse.
Yeah. he's the dressage horse.
Well, a lot of us were speculating last night that after all that binder full of women business that he might be sent to the barn to sleep, and all I could think was sleep with your back to the wall, Rafalka.
Okay, Bob, I'll call again some night. I think it's getting on close up there to that hour, so I will let you go and wish all the listeners a happy evening. And
well, you know, I do want to tell you before you go, Granny T, somewhere out there you've got a neighbor of a kindred spirit.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I don't know, not particularly, but we got a contribution in last night, and
yeah.
The notation in the was from not too awful far from Granny T.
Well, no kidding.
Yeah, so, you know, two people is a movement.
Hey, I'm glad to hear that.
You have a wonderful night, Granny T.
I hope they will put me a note on your Facebook.
Well, we'll see what we can do.
Well, okay, and blessings from the planet Glob or whatever the hell it is.
And wherever the hell and whoever. And
okay, guys.
All right, you take care, Granny T. Have a good night.
You too, bud.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Granny T from Tennessee. Love her calls. Hey, welcome to the program.
Wine in boxes. I remember when it used to come in bottles.
Well, that's true. Maybe that was the first faux pas, Jim.
Well, I've never done wine in boxes.
Well, you make me wonder here. I mean, fraternity style.
That's okay. We need to get into that.
No. Fraternity style. Okay. I just thought we would look this up because you reminded me. He writes in his the rambling confession that he was invited to participate in the Tour de Franzia. And Franzia was the brand of box wine that they were drinking.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, I've never seen Chateau Neuf du Pape or Poilly Puisse come in a box.
No. And I don't think I've ever known how to actually pronounce that, and I thank you very kindly, Jim.
You're quite welcome. You mentioned my name, and you summoned me up in that.
Well, yes, I conjured you.
And why did you do that?
Because Philip has picked up on your bad ways. He's becoming incorrigible, and
Wait a minute. I'm not incorrigible. I'm just truthful and realistic. Hell, back in my day, people used to take acid to their ass because it would, you know, prevent all the bad things that the acid was cut with.
I had no idea.
You certainly did. Come on.
No, I've heard of taking, like, the liquid stuff and putting it in the lower eyelid.
No. I mean, I never was a devotee of that.
Well, I was. The idea of having another guy tripping his brains out with a pin next to my eyeball was enough to put me off that. You get my meaning, I'm sure.
No, I'm not.
Well, you know, you take a straight pin and you put a little tiny drop of liquid acid and you put it in the lower eyelid and it's supposed to just boom straight to your brain. But I was never willing to let a person who was already tripping get that close to my eyeball with a straight pin.
Well,
or even, you know, an unfolded paper clip or no.
Well, I understand that, but no, I don't understand that because I never quite experienced. Ingesting acid like that. I mean, I never really got into that too much. The only acid trip I ever had was when a friend of mine sent me a letter from San Francisco, and at the bottom there was a thing in a red felt tip pen, cut this out and cut it in half, which I did. And I can guarantee you one thing, that was enough for me right there. I never quite got into that particular thing. It was just too much for me. But, you know, maybe this young man needs a butt plug and let everybody know that he has a butt plug so that, and even when he achieves his majority and he can build his home, that he's built his house with even out a back door.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That is.
I mean, haven't these fools ever heard of suppositories?
No, because they are unchristian and demonic.
I've never heard of a suppository being taken orally.
No, if one has hemorrhoids, one does not use preparation H because those are hemorrhoids God wants you to have.
Oh dear. the roids. I don't know. It's just amazing to me to hear this story being extrapolated so that, you know, it what appears to me is as the young man does protest too much.
Well, like I said, this thing is just, I could have called Dr. Freud in to comment, but he was busy at the time.
Apparently.
But when you're doing all this protestation and yet you still manage to work in a Wizard of Oz reference, well, you know.
Well, I'm not sure where that Wizard of Oz thing came in. Can you explain that to me, please?
Well, I certainly don't necessarily, that's what I'm saying. I don't necessarily understand the applicability of bringing it in, except to say that we are not in, you know, when he said, Dorothy, we're not in Kansas anymore. I think he was just trying to find a way to, and really? Lawyer McGeehee wrote this?
Is that because the Wizard of Oz is supposed to be such a favorite among a gay film audience?
Well, yeah, I mean it is beloved in the gay community, I've always been told. And, you know, with one Somewhere Over the Rainbow being an anthem of a hopeful, unbigoted, unprejudiced future.
Well, okay, if that's his connection, that's fine.
But I don't. I can't figure out why in that. You know, how do you go from protesting your absolute commitment to Christianity? How do you go from that to a Wizard of Oz reference, Jim?
Je ne sais pas. I don't know either.
Je ne sais pas aussi.
Well, anyway, that was quite a story, and the guy going to all these links to. Produce.
And you know what? When you're protesting that you've never had an enema, never use the word heinous. I almost made you laugh.
Mm. I was just sort of taken aback by the whole thing. Excuse me.
You understand the concept of hazing. You have told us about your experiences at the Citadel. And certainly in your day, if I dare say, it was not unheard of. And the thing is, I guess it still exists, but now among the privileged class, it is largely limited to drinking dangerous amounts of alcohol by underage kids away from home for the first time.
Well, that is a problem. And it's been referenced many times in the public media and stuff like that, and how these kids simply just, I guess being away from home and subjected to peer pressure, they do things that they really should not do, and some of these things can be very dangerous. But, you know, there it is, and there you have it. I'll tell you one story. A friend of mine who used to work in the ER at Thatcher's Hospital in Columbia, and a guy came in there with a Coke bottle in there. Now, you go figure that one out.
You can look on the Internet, and there are photographs of there are X-rays of myriad things that get dug out, and I just sat down and I didn't realize it was there.
I know, and that thing I know was built for pitching and not catching.
I'm surprised that's not in the protestation somewhere, Jim.
Oh my God! But nonetheless, pursuant to last night's debate, you know, Count Mitchell really showed his fangs.
There are photographs of him where he looks positively vampiric, Jim.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was just absolutely furious. I mean, he's the boss, and he's not accustomed to anybody second-guessing him, and how dare you confront me with the truth when I'm trying to perpetuate 31 lies. How dare you?
Right, and it would be bad enough if some almost equal of his did that, but it was done by a woman, Jim.
Yeah, I think Candy Crowley, with all my comments about her wardrobe malfunctions, I think, number one, she was very well fitted out. Number two, she was right on target. She was at the top of her game, and she called that bastard to a, you know, she called him right to a point. She called him on it. And I think the president did a very good job in dealing with what I consider to be a born-again fool, but a very dangerous born-again fool.
Do you, you know, you talk about, you say that Candy Crowley did fairly well, and she certainly exceeded our expectations, I think.
Yeah, like I say, she was very well turned out.
It was, would you care to engage in a little bit of a guessing game with me, Jim? How long did it take after the debate ended before Fox News Radio Rwanda started blaming Candy Crowley for the outcome?
About 2 seconds.
You're off by 30. It was literally 32 seconds afterward when Megyn Kelly, one of the stunning Fox blondes, started screaming about the questions that were asked.
What about calling the man to account for,
well,
the veracity of what he was, the statement he was making about the Rose Garden thing?
Well, let's just check it out. Here's Megan.
I heard it.
An extraordinary 90 minutes, Brett, as we watch the two candidates go after each other aggressively on this town hall floor tonight. Much more aggressive than we saw in the prior debate, literally getting into each other's faces, into each other's spaces. We have been promised by the Obama campaign that we would see a more aggressive President Obama, and indeed we did tonight. Both men fighting for the last word, interrupting each other on virtually every question, fighting with the moderator at various times. And the questions, 11 questions asked in all, and some of which will certainly be discussed tomorrow, topics that we haven't heard much about at all in this presidential campaign. Equal pay for women. In fact, there were a lot of women's issues discussed. Abortion, contraception, women's pay, as I mentioned.
Yeah, because nobody, we said, Jim, I haven't heard anything discussed about women's rights in this campaign. Have you? Except for almost every day nonstop.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, Romney was Mr. Etch-a-Sketch, as usual. I mean, he was talking about how he supported a woman's right to choose, did he not?
Yep.
But then again, he said that he doesn't support that at all. I mean, this guy is so crooked, he uses a corkscrew for a ruler.
No, when Willard finally shuffles off to Kolob, he's so crooked they'll have to screw him into the dirt.
Well, I was proud of President Obama, and I was really pissed off because of the manner in which he addressed the President of the United States. As if he was some pickaninny on the farm. And basically, the look in Romney's eyes that Obama was, as if he wanted to take him under his heel and squash him like a bug. I mean, the guy was really upset. And I've commented before on this program about the look and the expressions on this man's face, the anger and the hate and the absolute surprise of being questioned about anything. I mean, he's the guy who likes to fire people. He's the guy who likes to be in control and have the last word. Well, he didn't have the last word last night. And he certainly hurt himself greatly.
Jim, you have a very well-developed sense of decorum.
I try.
And you succeed. When you're being playful, when you're being facetious, you are obviously so. But when you are serious, there is no doubting it.
No.
And understanding where you've been, who you've been, where you've worked. Have you ever seen anyone behave more rudely to the President of the United States of America than did Bishop Willard Romney last night?
No. No, I have not. And if anyone in my past history had behaved in that manner, they would have been removed from the briefing platform and probably given an Article 15.
Well, is this in America? 32. Is this in America now? I mean, is it because he is a man of dark skin that a privileged white man feels empowered to behave in such a fashion? I mean, there were times when he was practically chasing Barack Obama around that stage. I mean, in any other circumstance, we would have used the verb stalk.
No, Bob, this is a man who, in my opinion, is unbalanced, who is a very frightening individual. And I can just imagine him under a crisis situation with his finger on the nuclear football, or him summoning his aide carrying that football, or the man who was signing an emergency action message to a submarine somewhere in the world to let him fly.
It's chilling, isn't it?
That's what I thought about. I mean, this guy is...
And you've never had a moment of that. You've never had an instant's thought about that with Barack Obama. If anything, the one thing we understand about Barack Obama is that if he decides he's got to kill, he does it coolly, and he does it after some level of cogitation, and that he does so in a professional manner. I get from Bishop Willard that he could decide to roast the earth if his 2 minute egg was a minute and 50 seconds.
Well, Romney doesn't like to take advice, and he doesn't like people who disagree with him. And he is a person who, in my opinion, as I said before, is very dangerous. I mean, you can look at the guy. You can just look at his facial expressions. I said this before, at the way he comports himself, even the way he walks. I mean, he was minting around that debate platform like he was trying to imitate a prima ballerina assoluta of the Bolshoi and not doing so very well. I mean, he was just all over everything. I mean, I feel, you know, in my personal opinion, I just think the guy's unbalanced. I think he's got some serious problems. And we've already had enough experience with another president who had personal problems, like W.
Well, I take it all the way back to Ronald Reagan. You being a little bit older than me, probably well remember when Reagan, to a mic that he thought was closed, said, "We have declared that the Soviet Union is illegal. The missiles launch in 2 minutes."
Yeah, or we bomb Russia, that type thing. Yeah, I remember that back in '84. We sure do. But at least Reagan, well, I think Reagan compared to the bishop, and I never thought I would say this, but even he had more control and better sense than this present-day Republican. I'm just totally flummoxed by the whole thing. I mean, this whole debate thing and... I just wonder what it really accomplishes.
Well, I don't think it accomplishes anything if after these pageants we still have those, and we're still working through this question. If after two of these pageants and one with the vice presidential candidates, we've still got some percentage in the United States of America. Again, I'm not saying one way or the other or who is right or who they should be for, but if at this stage of the game you've still got undecided voters...
Well, Bob, that's just the way it is as far as the intellectual capacity of these undecided voters are concerned. I mean, they simply do not see the world in the same way.
Do they stand in the bread aisle at the grocery store for 2 and 3 and 4 hours just saying, "Sunbeam,
or Wonder Bread? Sunbeam or Wonder Bread? Whole wheat or white?
Oh, my God. Most of them probably remind me of what's her name on Golden Girls, Rose. I mean, they're just so woodenly stupid and so stupidly wooden. They don't know their ass from hole.
The idea that one woman interviewed was trotting out the, but he's been such a great businessman.
Well, yeah. I'll agree. And so was
Martin. He sure gave him the business in Indiana.
Yeah, I know. And so, you know, so was Martin Bormann for Hitler. I mean, he was a great businessman, too. I mean, is being a great businessman such a...
That's the question I alluded to earlier, and it is a mark of the success of the right wing in this country that they have so driven this message home that being a businessman is what qualifies you to be in government. Thomas Jefferson had in his entire life only one enterprise at Monticello that actually yielded a profit, and that was his slave-run nailery. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
George Washington was, in fact, while Supreme General of the Colonial Army, he was a master of the expense account. Granted.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but he was a planter, not a businessman.
Well, and George had such merry money, too.
You're darn right.
And
we can go down through history. Abraham Lincoln was never a great businessman. Teddy Roosevelt was not a great businessman. In fact, most of the businessmen who managed to find their way into the presidency wound up being disastrous presidents, and yet somehow, Jim, and I honest to God don't understand it, we in 2012 are still plagued by this notion the businessman is the man who can best run the country.
Well, Bob, I've always said, number one, you cannot run government like a business. They are not the same entity, okay? Government is not to be made to run for a profit, so to speak, in the business model.
If it does, people will die.
Do what now?
If it does, people die unnecessarily.
Well,
because what is the profit of government? You know, there's that dumb bastard last night, once again, repeating the phrase, government does not create jobs. Then why the hell is he running for a government-created job?
Well, he wants to be the most powerful man in the free world. It's an ego thing.
But it's a government job.
Well, it doesn't make any difference whether it's a government job or not. I mean, if he wanted to really do this, he could go off like one of these characters in these James Bond movies, you know, who were trying to destroy the world and stuff like that.
I mean, go buy the flying car and be happy.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole thing was, number one, I'm going to get off here. Number one, I appreciated the president's ability to stand up to this fool. And number two, I appreciate Candy Crowley's role in it. And number three, what can I say? Up the ass can be a gas, and that's it.
And with that, you will depart. Thank you,
that's
Jim.
It. And here concludes the lesson.
And all God's children said amen.
And hopefully they'll have shoes.
Exactly. Bye now, Jim. And we'll try to get one more call in before the close of the program. Hey, welcome. Welcome aboard.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Good, good. Congratulations on the fundraising effort today.
Indeed. Hey. And thank you again to Robert and to John and to everybody who heard the call and answered the bell and have made some delightful bill paying possible immediately after show's ending.
Well, it's good to hear. I made my donation at the beginning of the month. Don't forget that.
Oh, I know you did. You know, it's 100. We try to raise $100 a show, and it's what makes it all possible.
And you asked, you told Jim or said to Jim, no one had disrespected the president like
Willard
Romney last night.
Yeah,
Jim Burr, Arizona.
Okay, very good. Point well made.
Yeah, that's symptomatic of this whole right wing. They they can't bring themselves to respect even the office, much less the man. And, you know, it just is sad. But enough said. I just wanted to call and say congratulations tonight on that. It was awesome to hear. May call tomorrow when there's more time, but
indeed.
I really enjoyed the show tonight.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you kindly. You have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Sincerely, I don't remember experiencing a night like this. Thank you very, very much. All of you who made all of this happen, and those of you who every night make this happen with your kind contributions. It is humbling, it is amazing, and it is inspiring. Because we're proving that we can have media that is not driven by the commercial parasites. We can have the media we want. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our, well, constant, unending thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org, and always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is on the way on...